MSO News, giving voice to the North Shore. This is North Shore Today for Wednesday, April 10, 2024, brought to you by Moynihan Lumber. Moynihan Lumber supporting local news coverage and communities on the North Shore. I'm Rick Moore with today's headlines. Beverly City Council rejects the library HVAC project. Denver School Committee struggles with funding for migrant issues. Linfield Town elections held yesterday.
I'm Bill Newell. A bit later in sports, we have some North Shore sports updates, plus Celtics, Bruins, and Red Sox all lose. Rick?
How rare is that? All right, thanks, Bill. Sun, then clouds, mid to upper 50s, high tide, Gloucester Harbor, 1:16 p.m. The Beverly City Council has rejected a proposed $18 million HVAC project for the library. Paul Layton reports in today's Salem News that the original price tag of $3.75 million jumped to $18 million several months ago. Ward 6 City Councilor Matt St. Hillier said that the feedback I've heard is that $18 million is too much to spend on an HVAC system for a building valued at $6 million. City Councilor at Large Brendan Sweeney stated two concerns he had over the library project.
The first major concern was with regards to dependence on a large amount of federal IRA, and that's Inflation Reduction Act, tax credits that were not a guarantee that if we did not receive those tax credit would mean that the city of Beverly would be stuck with a substantially larger bill for this project to do the geothermal project as opposed to the in-kind replacement. But however, I will say based on both research that I've done, information that's been presented to the council, and conversations with those that work more closely in this field, I do have more confidence that this money would be available to Beverly if we were to opt for this path or opt to utilize IRA tax credits for other eligible projects between the period when those tax credits will last, which is up until they expire in 2032. So that was my number one concern. Another concern to me was that it was not clear that the potential savings for maintenance costs, reduced electrical usage, or other energy cost savings would materialize to the extent that they have been projected.
Sweeney added that there are several additional capital projects in the pipeline that Beverly has to fund.
So as I mentioned, some of these concerns have been addressed throughout this process, and I appreciate the information that we received. However, I'm still concerned about this proposal. And that view is not only due to those two concerns with the specific proposal, but also a larger matter of prioritization. And specifically on that end, my concern is that the city won't have the necessary financial capacity to complete pressing capital projects that I view as higher priorities than the library. While obviously we have competing priorities and it's tough as policymakers to have to state those competing priorities, in my mind, the Central Fire Station, the City Hall renovations, and the McPherson Youth Center, I think are more impactful projects. Not in that we do one at the expense of the other, but in which order we tackle those projects. And it hasn't really been discussed tonight, but I think it's an important capital project, and it's the one that I'm most concerned about, which is the Central Fire Station.
Beverly City Councilor at Large Brendan Sweeney. The entire City Council meeting can be viewed on BevCam. An explosive device that was previously activated was found at the Satanic Temple on Bridge Street on Monday. Dustin Luca writes in today's Salem News that after hoax threats over the past year, an actual device did go off. No one was present in the building in Salem at the time the device went off. The Danvers School Committee this week heard legislative updates from Representative Sally Cairns and Senator Joan Lovely. Denver schools are dealing with an influx of migrant students, and the State House budget forecast is looking at revenue shortfalls. This is Representative Cairns talking about education funding issues in the state and in Danvers.
Talked very powerfully about the challenges that rural schools are having, which I know what we have is a challenge, but the rural schools are really up against it. And MMA said, well, we wouldn't be able to weigh in on that because we'd have some that would win and some that would not. So we're aware, and I am, you know, cautiously optimistic that we'll come through it fairly well. And I'm fully aware of how hard the situation with the federal inaction at the border and what that has brought to us. So it's brought to us a richness for our kids, certainly, to be exposed to children of different cultures. That's important. Have to be realistic about what the costs are, and so I do see a big part of what we do is to make sure you get your reimbursements on time.
That's State Representative Sally Kerins. Later in North Shore Today Extra, we will hear more of the state's budget concerns and the concerns facing the Danvers schools with Senator Joan Lovely. Teacher contracts are underway in Gloucester. Ethan Foreman reports in today's Gloucester Times that the union took part in a walk-in demonstration at the city schools yesterday, asking for paid family leave, a benefit they don't have. Currently, teachers fall under the Family and Medical Leave Act that entitles them to unpaid time off for a new baby. And Beverly teachers were out this morning in front of schools as they, too, are doing standouts in support of family leave. Linfield held its town elections yesterday. The Daily Item is reporting today that Alexis Leahy defeated incumbent selectman Joe Connell. In the school committee race, Kate DiPrizio and Jim Dillon were elected to three-year terms. Two candidates were elected to the school board with one-year terms. They're Jenny Sheehan and Kristen Elworthy. And there's been a major shakeup at the Gloucester Harbormaster's office. Three top personnel have left the office, including the harbormaster, assistant harbormaster, and shell warden. We have two posts on the story on our website, and there is in-depth reporting in today's Gloucester Times. Bill Newell on sports next, followed by North Shore Today Extra.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Yes, we are a full-service lumber yard, but we also offer doors and windows and kitchen cabinets. Please visit us in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Taparo Capital Management. It's time to craft your retirement plan. Click on the Taparo banner at the top right of our website and begin creating your winning game plan.
If you're a soap bar user and you're always annoyed by the fact that when you use your entire bar, you're stuck with this little sliver of soap that you don't know what to do with, hold on, because I think I have the solution for you. It's always a pain to have that little sliver of soap that we didn't really know how to use but didn't want to waste and throw away. So we invented this cute cube-shaped soap bar that then you can place your old little soap sliver right into. There's a carved out X in the center of the bar that then you can place your old soap sliver into. You just break up that little sliver into pieces that are two or three and it fits right inside. And bam, now you've got a brand new soap bar and you didn't have to waste anything. If that's something you're interested in and you want to support a sustainable small business, then head on over to our shop at exobath.com. You can buy one for yourself or give it as a gift. It ships anywhere in the United States and you can get 20% off your first order.
Click on to the Exobath banner at the top of our website.
This is MSO Sports, bringing voice to the North Shore. The eclipse was Monday, but yesterday was a much darker day for our three sports teams. The Orioles beat the Red Sox 7-1 in the Fenway home opener. The Celtics lost to the Bucks in Milwaukee 104-91, and the Bruins lost to the Carolina Hurricane 4-1 at the Garden last night. Bruins coach Jim Montgomery, a fast start for the Bees, but not a strong finish.
No, I loved our first. I thought we were really physical. I thought we were engaged. Couple good scoring chances. They had a couple. Second period, I thought they came out and they pushed hard. They were over top of us. I thought their checking skills were superior to ours, and it led to a lot of us playing in our D zone. And then, you know, obviously they got ahead of us. And then third period, I thought I'd like their first 5 minutes. And then as soon as the third goal went in, it kind of like the air came out of the balloon.
The Salem News Sports Department printed their winter sports boys track all-stars in today's paper. The boys indoor track player of the year is Peabody High junior Alex Jackson. In high school baseball, Peabody beat Revere 5-2. And in softball, Salem over Malden 17-1. Marblehead beat Saugus 6-1. Today, a few games to watch in high school baseball. Fenwick travels to St. Mary's. Zavarian is at the prep. And Winthrop plays at Danvers. This is Winthrop coach Mark DeGregorio on the Northeastern Conference this season.
Yeah, I mean, I anticipate Peabody having a very good year this year. I think... they were really young last year. They graduated a bunch the year before, but they return a lot. So those guys kind of got the experience, and sometimes that's all you need. You kind of face the adversity, and once you faced it, now you know exactly what to expect. Going back to a team like Salem 2 years ago, they were 1-19, and then last year they won the conference because they returned their entire team, and they knew exactly what to expect. I see Salem as a good team again this year. They have a new coach, but they return two really good pitchers. in Rocco Ryan and the kid Fennerty. Beverly's notoriously very good. Masco's very well coached by TJ Burrell, and they're very good. Marblehead's also very well coached. I mean, it's a very hard conference. It's you don't know who's going to come out on top on a given year because there's so many good teams. You know, it's very different. And we talk a little bit about how we're the only Division IV team in the NEC. So we constantly are going to be considered the underdogs, I guess, is the best way to put it. But again, I don't make excuses. We want to try to compete in every game, and I don't care who we're playing. We want to compete and try to find a way to win. But again, those teams are very, very good. So to try to like pick a single team is tough.
Winthrop's Mark DiGregorio, again, they're at Danvers this afternoon. This is North Shore Today, giving voice to the North Shore, the area's only daily news and sports podcast. Along with Rick Moore, I'm Bill Newell, hoping you have a great Wednesday. North Shore Today Extra is next with State Senator Joan Lovely.
Taparo Capital Management. It's time to craft your retirement plan. Click on the Taparo banner at the top right of our website and begin creating your winning game plan.
This is North Shore Today Extra, and today we're hearing from State Senator Joan Lovely. Now, Joan Lovely and State Rep Sally Cairns updated the Danvers School Committee on Monday on the state budget crisis. We're running this extended clip with Senator Lovely as she provides a lot of information, not just on the Danvers increased migrant population in their schools, but also some state budget-ish information as well. So it's pretty informative. If you want to hang in there and check out this this segment with Senator Joan Lovely, and again, Rep. Sally Cairns from Danvers is also in the audio clip as well. So here it is.
I want to talk a little bit. So I actually had my meeting with the Chair of Ways and Means this morning, Senate Ways and Means, about the budget. So we talked about Chapter 70 and Circuit Breaker, which I will tell you, as the Senate, so the House is crafting their budget now, and your budget drops next Wednesday,
yep. Yep.
And then you will debate it like another 10 days later, so not the following week, the week after.
After vacation.
The Senate budget will drop mid-May, and then we debate that budget the week before Memorial Day weekend. That actually keeps us on task to make sure we're done. And so in meeting with the chair, I can only speak on the Senate side, and it's fresh in my mind of having this conversation this morning with the chair. We're looking at, you've watched how revenues have fallen, you know, revenue collections have fallen compared to our projections by $200 to $300 million a month over the last 9 months, except for March. This past March, it jumped. It was in the black. So that's a good sign. We're cautiously optimistic about that. But based on that, it's almost $300 million less as we build the FY25 budget compared to the FY24 budget. And we've already cut almost $1 billion from the FY24 budget. As you know, the governor exercised her 9C powers and did some cuts right across the board. And then took some discretionary funding to be able to plug in some holes, so it didn't hurt, and she did it early, on the early side, which makes it hurt less, but still hurts. The good news is we have $8.4 billion in our rainy day fund. Can we spend it on, you know, bring it in and plug in holes? No. If we do, what we need is for like a really, you know, for a recession or a pandemic, God forbid that happens again, where we would spend that money. Although I think we're in a bit of issues with paying what we are welcoming our migrant students and our migrant families, capped at 7,500 families, which, if you do the math, is probably upwards of 20,000 people, give or take. And that's costing the Commonwealth, $1 billion for this fiscal year. And the Senate and House have come up with some solutions in our budgets, respective budgets, on how to kind of start to have those revenues go down, so that we need to push the administration, respective respectfully, to start to house people. And where do you house them? Well, there's the billion-dollar question. It's been difficult. But in Salem, Salem is now under what they call a demobilizing effort, because Salem houses about just north of 300 people at the Bates dormitory, which is on the South Campus. That South Campus has been sold, and the state contracted back with the provider to have these families in there since November of 22. Was when those families, mostly Haitian Creole, but that contract is up at the end of June, and so that property has to be delivered free and clear of people. And so right now the state, Salem is working with the state through the mayor's office, is leading on what they call demobilizing. In other words, moving these families into housing. Some have been housed. Some have been moved into, frankly, the Holiday Inn in Peabody. They have found homes for some in Lynn, in Salem. And I want to say that maybe 45 families have been placed either in a variety of those scenarios and continuing to place the remainder of the families, because the property has to be free and clear. I raise that because it gives us really a snapshot of what this is going to look like as we really start to push to house families. When I first got into the Senate in 2013, motels and hotels were filled with homeless families from one end of the Commonwealth to the other. Very expensive, terrible for families. And especially children. And I think the Patrick administration worked hard to turn that needle, and then the Baker administration, when they came on board, really, really turned that needle. And we got that down to under 100 families across. So, you know, I think it was one motel in, like, middle Massachusetts where we were housing families at the time. So it's stressful to see us go the other way again, but we don't have a choice. These are families who are here with documentation, and as we know, and we're going to do our best to house them. You are doing your best to educate, and we are so very grateful. We have these weekly meetings with Dan for the Danvers and Peabody hotels and motels, and it's very helpful, I think, on both sides. It helps us all hear it at the same time. What's the impact on you as a community and as a school system? And we know that it's an impact, and that you need these reimbursements on time, that you need these transportation costs on time, and that's what we keep, that's what I'm telling the Ways and Means Chair, and he's hearing it. We also know that your ESSER funding's running out in 2024, so I assume that the budget you've built, which I have this, so you actually printed it off, and I read the executive summary, thank you very much, it was really excellent.
Thank you.
And so, you know, you have to build those because you've created those positions out of need, mm-hmm. and now you want to continue to fund them without the funding that is no longer there. Back to the circuit breaker, the chair, in the Senate, and I'm sure it's in the House. The Senate chair speaks fondly of the House chair. They have a really a very strong relationship, and they're really trying to get to the same points. And
I think yours is more forthcoming than mine.
Maybe.
less detail on my side.
Maybe. But on the Senate side, the effort is to fully fund Circuit Breaker, so that we haven't always done that, but we did in this fiscal year and continue to do that going forward. And we do have the Fair Share Amendment dollars and the Student Opportunity Act dollars, so where we've made those commitments, and the voters have made those commitments. So we'll continue in that way as well. We know what you're up against. We hear you. We're so grateful that you're so involved in telling us what the needs are so we can communicate that back and make sure that happens. Both of us are very aligned on and talk to our respective leadership often. We're not shrinking violets when it comes to the ask, and to just make sure, and they already know. They're hearing it from all the members across the House and Senate. So even though the Senate's budget for FY25 is going to be, that are $300 million less, the chair is still feeling confident that Chapter 70 will be fully funded. We're not going to take it away from the schools, not going to touch UGA and on any of our local aid, because you rely heavily on it. The promise is there to make sure that happens. That's what I was told. And so we're just going to, continue to shoulder together and make sure that message is just consistent. And again, they're hearing it, we're talking about it, and we're building our budgets accordingly to make that happen. And just say thank you for, you're absolutely right. There should be other communities that aren't facing these financial hardships. And, it's difficult on the school system. It's difficult on the community. Danvers has stepped up during the past crisis with homeless families, and you're stepping up again. But there's only so much that you can do and that you're working with. And we recognize that as well. So that's a really novel idea that other communities that don't have these impacts, that frankly they don't have a motel or a hotel in their district, so
absolutely,
they're not impacted.
That's in my district.
But they all. But the revenues do. There is that.
Yes.
The budget is, distributed, and so it's not as though if you're not educating children through this program, you're not contributing. But you're not contributing as much as
it's a different
we are in the other 89 communities.
It's the impact. It's a big impact, and it's recognized. And but for the motels, other communities aren't facing the same issues.
That is State Senator Joan Lovely. Also, from time to time, you heard Rep. Sally Cairns from Danvers here on North Shore Today Extra. The entire school committee meeting can be viewed and heard on Danvers Community Television on YouTube. This is MSONewsSports.com.